doggone rootin' tootin' gas prices. I've had all I can stands. I can't stands no more. Seriously. You're telling me there's no one out there that can figure a way out of this gas crisis? How long has it been since Orville and Wilbur Redenbacher invented the airplane? How long has it been since Louis Armstrong walked on the moon? All our technological advances, and we can't figure out how to make a car that runs on air? Air don't cost a thing. Poke two holes in the front of the car and figure out some sort of propulsion to push that air out the back. At this point, I'm ready to stick a big bed sheet on top of my car and use it as a sail. Either that, or I'm just going to have to start driving only downhill. Gravity don't cost nothing either. What? Take the music down. What about, take the music all the way down. Let me talk to the people. What about New Jersey? Did you see this? In New Jersey stores will no longer give you a bag after you're done shopping. That's any store, clothing store, restaurant, supermarket, no bag. Doesn't matter. Now, it was bad enough when they started with the self-checkout. Everywhere you go now, self-checkout, Home Depot, Lowe's, some pharmacies even. I was in a CVS, self-checkout. But at the grocery store, self-checkout. And even if you didn't want to deal with the self-checkout, you kind of have no choice now because there's only a couple of other lines open. You got the 15 items or less line, you got the regular line, and then you got the self-checkout. So I go to the self-checkout just the other day, and I'm ringing up my stuff, putting it in my own bag that I got to bring in now. And I look around and I see there's five or six other people all ringing up their items, checking out their items, putting them in their bags. And the one person that works there is standing there watching us. You get that? We're all working and the one person who's on the clock isn't. She's watching us. The only time she does anything is when she's got to come over to help me because I'm having trouble ringing up that one loose banana. So she swipes her little ID card and punches in some code like she's arming nukes in a bunker. And then she goes back to stand and watch me as I work. I said, you may as well stand right here. I'm going to need you again when I try and ring up these grapes. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. Welcome to the Comparison Group podcast. It's Monday, May 23rd. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, anywhere you get podcasts. Hey, so I'm on Pandora now. Get a load of that. Pandora just decided to just put me on there. I don't even recall asking Pandora to put me on their platform, but I'm on Pandora. So listen, share the show there if you would like. And thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone who shares the show. I know I say it all the time, but I'm going to keep on saying it. I really, really do appreciate it. I went to Apple Podcast and I was looking at my analytics. I don't do that very often because I don't know what it means. But I went and looked, and I saw we were up 200%, 200% in subscribers, in downloads, and listens. Now, I guess that could mean I went from 4 to 12. Is that 200%? I don't know. But I think it's good. I think that's really good. In the last 60 days, it was. That was the time frame. In 60 days, we were up 200%. So again, thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. Please continue to share the show with your friends. It's the only way I really know how to get the show out there right now is to ask you to please copy the link from wherever maybe you listen, whether it's Apple, Google, Spotify, and paste it. Copy and paste. That's all. A link to the show, a link to a particular episode, however you want to do it, to your Facebook, to anywhere. send it in a text message, copy and paste it in a text message, in an email, whatever. I really do appreciate it. And I like this audience. I'm realizing I like this audience. You know why? Because you're smart. I'll say that. I'll give credit where credit is due. This audience appears to be smart. I can tell that from the comments I do get. But I can also tell you're smart, and I like this audience because I don't get a lot of nitpicking comments. I don't get a lot of little comments trying to argue and question every detail of every little thing that I say on the show. I get that on Twitter. Drives me crazy. I put a little tweet out responding to something or making a simple comment, and oh, you just get a flood of people who just want to nitpick at every little thing you say and argue every little thing that you say. So I'm really happy that I seem to be building an audience who gets it, who gets the idea of the show. It's not about agreement. It's not about total agreement. It's not about total disagreement. It's supposed to be a little bit of both. That's the way it's supposed to work. So I appreciate that. I appreciate people who rate the show. Everyone gives me 5 stars. Somebody gave me a 1-star rating. Now, come on. Come on. I don't mind if you don't like the show. That's fine. But it's not a 1-star show. There are no shows that are a 1-star show. Let me tell you something. Anyone who puts themselves out there, who has a little bit of ambition, a little bit of courage to do a podcast, give them a 3-star rating. Nobody is a 1-star rating. So that's fine. But I appreciate all the other people who give the 5-star ratings. Keep them coming. But let's get down to it. I'm stalling. Really don't want to talk about this. But let's get down to it. Now you've heard all the obvious commentary you're going to hear about the shooting in Buffalo. Tucker Carlson is evil. Republicans like Elise Stefanik are evil. And by the way, for people who don't know who Elise Stefanik is, don't worry. No one does. She was a nobody until Liz Cheney fell out of favor with the Republicans because of her views about January 6th, and they needed a replacement. They said, hey, is there anyone with no morals or values who wants to take Liz Cheney's place? And Elise Stefanik said, yeah, I'll do it. So we heard all about how the shooter fed into a lot of the rhetoric coming from Tucker Carlson, Elise Stefanik. We also heard a lot about white supremacy, racism. White supremacy, racism. We got to do something about guns. We got to get the guns out of the hands of people with mental issues. All the stuff you're used to hearing, you've heard at this point. So hopefully we can have a little broader discussion here, a little broader conversation here. Some of it you'll agree with. Some of it you probably won't. That's how conversations about very difficult topics are supposed to go. Now, let me be very clear right up front, though. There is no middle ground when it comes to overt racism, violence, and hatred. You know, this show is about middle ground, about looking at things from all sides, but I'm going to say it again. There is no middle ground to be found when it comes to racism, violence, and hatred. Don't mistake anything I say here as in any way shifting blame or making excuses for any individual or organization. Don't mistake what I say here as in any way diminishing the pain of the victims and their families of the Buffalo shooting. What I say here is meant to be grown-up talk without an agenda that leads to ideas and discussions that lead to solutions. Now, sometimes that discussion, that conversation, it can sting. Sometimes it can sting. You hear things that you really don't want to hear, but that's what we got to do. So I'm going to tell you off the bat, I have a problem with the term white supremacy. I used that term in an episode I did about extremism. A few shows later, I said, you know, I don't think I'm going to use that term anymore, white supremacy. It seems to be an outdated term that's too broadly labels an entire group of people. So I don't think I'm going to use the term white supremacy anymore. I don't like it. It's too broad. It's too general. Now, allow me to explain. White supremacy is mostly linked with conservatives and Republicans. Well, conservatives and Republicans are very confusing right now. It's like seeing a porn star in church. It just doesn't add up. If you watch one of those porn award shows, you'll see some young lady get up and accept the award for best anal, and she's wearing a big necklace with a crucifix on it. And sometimes she'll even thank God for the award. Oh, I want to thank God for allowing me to win the award for best anal. It's a little weird. That's the Republican Party right now. Now, understand me. This is not a knock against porn stars. This is a knock against the Republican Party, particularly on the issue of hate speech. It's confusing. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. If my sister shows up to a party and says, "This is my new boyfriend, Chocolate Thunder. He's a porn star," I would be polite and say, "Okay, nice to meet you." And then later I'd pull her aside and say, "Hey, what the heck are you doing?" If she showed up and said, "This is my new boyfriend, Tucker. He works for Fox News," I would say, "Oh, no, you don't. Oh, no, you don't. You're disgusting. How do you live with yourself? Out of my house, both of you. I don't want to speak to you again until you end this relationship with this disgusting person." And I think there are a lot of people, maybe at least half of this country, would agree with me on that sentiment. That's a problem. That's a problem, Republican Party. When your amplifier, where the place you go to get your message out, is considered worse than a person who has sex for money, that's a problem. If I ask you, between a person who has sex for money and a primetime Fox News host, who has less decency and morals, and half the country says, the Fox News host by a mile, that's a problem. But it also gets confusing because when it comes to race, there are black people all over Fox News and conservative media espousing some of the same views as Tucker Carlson. There are black elected officials or aspiring elected officials espousing some of the same views as some of the hate groups in this country. We just saw Kathy Barnett running for Senate in Pennsylvania. She apparently organized buses for the trip to the Capitol on January 6th. Tim Scott, a black senator from, is he from South Carolina or North Carolina? I think South Carolina. He never refuses his party's request to get out there and, hey, make us look less racist. But that being said, the white people of South Carolina would say, hey, we vote for him regardless of his color. Now, Ben Carson thinks slavery was a choice. I'm not sure what Kanye West thinks exactly. And how about former Sheriff David Clark from Wisconsin, a black conservative who said this?
It is time for this nation to stand up with one voice and to condemn and shun this movement called Black Lives Matter. I would like to see the Southern Poverty Law Center place Black Lives Matter alongside those other hate groups that were mentioned, these black nationalist groups, the Black Panther Party, the Nation of Islam. It doesn't mean that those organizations will go away just because they're on that list. But what happens is people start to delegitimize these movements and marginalize them. This movement needs to be marginalized. We have looked at this stuff. We have peeled back the layers. We've looked at the data. We've looked at the research. None of their false narrative about the use of force about the American police officer can be proved. None of it.
But what,
zero.
How would that,
so
would that have helped this?
Megan,
you know, because this guy wasn't part of Black Lives
Matter. It is time for, he said, according to the chief down there, Chief Brown, he was doing this in the name of Black Lives Matter. He said he wanted to kill
white people. The
language
was a little different than that. He did say the latter.
Okay, but it is time for the liberal mainstream media, the New York Times editorial board, the CNN, MSNBC, to stop walking on eggshells and giving legitimacy to these rants, to all this false narrative coming out of this Black Lives Matter movement.
Those were comments he made about 5 years ago, after we had a tragic shooting of police officers by a racist black man in Dallas. So you say, well, okay, I mean, he's entitled to his opinion, but here's another quote from black conservative former Sheriff David Clark. Quoting here, "Let me tell you why blacks sell drugs and involve themselves in criminal behavior instead of more socially acceptable lifestyle. Because they're uneducated, they're lazy, and they're morally bankrupt," close quote. That's what he said on Glenn Beck's show back in a 2015 interview. And there's plenty more like that to find from David Clark. But you also have black conservative Jesse Lee Peterson. You have black conservative Larry Elder, who ran and lost in an election to replace Gavin Newsom in a recall election as governor of California. This is what black conservative Larry Elder said in an interview.
Larry Elder has been around for a long time in California. He's a conservative talk radio host, has been on the air for 30 years. He's attracted controversy for his entire career.
You can make an argument that the people that are owed reparations are not only just black people, but also the people whose, quote, property, close quote, was taken away after the end of the Civil War.
Did you catch that? I'm going to play it again for you because he says it very quickly. He basically said that reparations shouldn't just go to black people. They should also go to the people who had their property taken away at the end of the Civil War. The property being slaves. The property being black people. Listen.
You can make an argument that the people that are owed reparations are not only just black people, but also the people whose, quote, property, close quote, was taken away after the end of the Civil War.
Certainly an interesting take on things. Black conservative Larry Elder feels the ancestors of white slave owners deserve reparations because they lost their property. They lost their slaves. This Republican conservative party is confusing. Now, most of the hate these days seems to be directed at Jewish people. Aren't most Jewish people white? Yes. According to Pew Research, 92% of Jewish people identify as white. 1% black, 1% black and white, 2% Hispanic and white, and so on. Now, conservatives are constantly going after liberals for not supporting Israel or being anti-Israel. But most of alt-right hate is directed at white Jewish people. So yeah, I'm saying, the term white supremacy is confusing me. The Republican Party is confusing me. Conservatives are confusing me. I think we need a different term. We need a more specific term for this hate. Because I don't know if the main driver of the type of hate that we're seeing right now is racial. I don't know if it's racial anymore. Race is a component, but is it the main driver? It appears to me the main driver of the hate is now political. It's political. As long as you align with my hate or my prejudice or my stereotype, you're okay by me. I don't care about your race, your religion, your gender, or even your sexual orientation. You can be transgender like Caitlyn Jenner and speak at the RNC convention as long as you're against trans rights. You can be black and get a standing ovation at CPAC as long as you say black people are lazy. You can be a man who degrades and insults women and still get women to support you. Listen to this guy. This is some guy I stumbled across on YouTube while I was looking for some other clips. The clip is entitled, Kevin Samuels Scolds Delusional Black Women. He's a black guy. That's the clip. Kevin Samuels Scolds Delusional Black Women. Listen to this.
Black women who still believe that all the leverage is still on your side and men got to impress you at all levels. It is crazy. Got news for you. You ladies have to impress men. We don't have to impress you. Not like that. See, that's the story that's been told to you ladies, that happy wife, happy life. And you got all these guys out here telling you what you want to hear. But I'm going to tell you, high value, productive men, productive, competitive, successful men aren't going out working 10, 12, 14 hour days and then coming home playing Joe in the bedroom, rubbing your back and massaging your toes and all this other kind of stuff. Girl, please. That's exactly what you hear a lot of these girls saying. Girl, please. You're lucky if you get 5 minutes. A man is not going out to build the world, build a business, and then have to come home and play a porn star. Y'all are crazy.
I have no idea who this guy is, but I guess he'll be the next up-and-comer on the right, because I don't know if some of these ideas are going to play too well over on the left. But watching the video, there are comments scrolling at the same time he's talking. I don't know if it's a TikTok video. I have no idea. But most of the comments people are giving this guy are positive. They're agreeing with him, and it appears that there may be black women giving him comments, agreeing with him, sending him smiling, laughing emojis like it's a big joke, having a good old time listening to this guy spew this garbage. I'll stick with the happy wife, happy life credo of life. Thank you very much, whoever you are, Kevin Samuels. So yeah, it's confusing. I'm confused. Guy had a following. I think he had something. He had over 1 million followers on that YouTube channel. That garbage. So what do I do about my confusion? What does the country do? First, I'll start with the country, because that's easy. I've said it before. I did a couple of episodes. One was entitled, Is the Media Evil? And the other was, How We End Extremism. And it's interesting, because when I was thinking about doing this episode, I said, well, how do we end extremism? How do we end hate? And then I realized, wait, I've already done that episode. I've already done it. I gave the suggestions. The media must carry disclaimers. This is a no-brainer. It simply has to happen. There is no infringement on First Amendment rights by saying to Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Alex Jones, your show must carry a disclaimer that the commentary is opinion, not fact, and is for entertainment purposes only. They should have no problem carrying that disclaimer, especially when they go to court and argue as their defense to a lawsuit, my show is for entertainment purposes only. I'm not going to go through this again. I've talked about it a few times on the show. Go to my website, www.thecomparisongroup.com, under Fact Checks and Sources. Both Tucker Carlson and Alex Jones have used in court as a defense, no one is supposed to take this stuff seriously. That's what they've said in court. Fine. Say it on your show. Put it on your show. If it was up to me, they would have to put the disclaimer before and after every single commercial. But of course, they're not going to do that. They're not going to be forced to do that. But the FCC should say, look, before your show, you have to play a disclaimer. People who can't figure out what this is need to be told what it is. It's entertainment. That's the easy part. And I could go on and on. But again, I've done it. I've done it. I did a couple of shows on the media. I did the extremism show. If you want, go back and listen. But my regular listeners, either you've heard it or you get it. You get it. I don't have to belabor this point. The media must be reined in by telling people what they're watching. We cannot continue to pretend we're watching news. We just can't. So that's the easy part. And I want to just cut through it, because I have a clip to play for you at the end of the show. That's a good clip, and it's going to take about 8 minutes just for that. So I want to just get through this for you. So that's the easy part. Here comes the hard part. You have to talk to your enemies. Black Lives Matters, black activist groups, you have got to sit down and talk to the people you do not want to talk to. Whoa, wait a second. You're not talking about, yes, I'm talking about those groups. Remember what I said? There were black people at the Capitol, shoulder to shoulder, with these very same groups, and they didn't feel threatened. Now, there's a violent element within these groups that you don't sit down with. Violence can't be negotiated with, but anger can. Misinformation can. It's all in how you do it. It ain't going to be easy. It ain't going to be easy. You got to find a mediator. You got to find a really good mediator. And it's got to start really slow. And it's got to start with the right people. The right people who, while on one hand, they want to be heard. They want to be listened to. That's where this anger comes from some of these groups, some of these hate groups. They do not like that their anger is being dismissed. They may not be all in for the violence. That may be a few people that are within that group. But there may be other people who just want to be listened to. So they'll take that opportunity. They'll take that opportunity to legitimately and honestly sit down with Black Lives Matter, with the NAACP, and other organizations. They'll take the opportunity the same way I've talked about before. The Fraternal Order of Police, the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, reached out and said on Aaron Burnett's show on CNN, I watched it live, after the George Floyd verdict, I will sit down and talk to anyone who wants to talk with me. We have a problem with policing in this country. I recognize it, and I want to sit down with anyone who wants to fix it. Did Black Lives Matter sit down with them? Nope. Did anyone sit down with him? Not that I know of. Can't solve problems like that. You got to sit down and you got to be willing to hear things that you don't want to hear, things that you're not going to like. And you're never going to walk away in total agreement. There's not going to be no kumbaya moment where everyone realizes, oh, we're all just the same. We're not all the same. We're not. We're not going to be the same. People have different experiences. Experiences shape who they are. So no one can just all be the same. But you might be surprised at how similar you find out you are if you sit down and talk. You're upset and pissed off at the Democratic Party? Well, join the club. So are a lot of black people who feel the Democrats take them for granted. Now, by the way, isn't it about time for Democrats and Republicans to start pretending they care about Hispanic issues? Midterms are right around the corner. I should suddenly start to see a lot of politicians appearing on Spanish shows. But in any case, some of these groups have a problem with people not working, collecting government benefits. Well, join the club. You think a hard-working, tax-paying person of any race isn't angry about another person of any race gaming the system? Whether they're on welfare or a billionaire that doesn't pay taxes. No one likes that, of any color. People are upset about immigration. They think they're being replaced. They think they're losing the country. Well, as Chris Rock put it, if you're losing, who's winning? It ain't poor black people. It ain't poor immigrants. Coming to this country to scrape out a meager living or looking over your shoulder to make sure you don't get shot by some madman? Would you call that winning? No, the only people who are winning are the people who are pumping this hate into our brains. They are the ones that are winning. Now, I'm speaking to the people who are angry on both sides, but their anger is misdirected. What did those people at the grocery store ever do to that 18-year-old killer? They say he had mental issues, and you have to do something like that. But the time he took in planning, I don't know. I don't know. He's a guy who was radicalized. He was a guy who had hate pumped into his heart by people who recognize we stay in power by pitting one race against another, one religious group against another. Those are the people who are winning. But we have our own responsibilities as individuals. We have to be consistent in our values, reprimand people from our own side when they don't do the right thing or they say something they shouldn't. And we can tone down our own rhetoric as individuals. Oh, yeah, we can. As someone who does a show from all points of view, I get it from both sides. I get the insults from both sides, but I just let it go. On Twitter, I just let it go. Doesn't bother me. Like I said, it just slows me down from getting to the good comments. That's all. But if someone insults you on Twitter, on Facebook, anywhere on social media, you know, you don't have to respond. You really don't. You know how many times I have to say, oh, I'd love to respond to this guy, but I don't because I don't know. I don't know who that person is. That's why we got to tone down, all of us. We have to tone down our rhetoric. We don't know who we're talking to. We don't know who we're enraging or whose anger we're inflaming. I ignore most insults because what am I going to do? Get into a back and forth competition to see who could send the more insulting, witty tweet? No, waste of time. Waste of your time, too. But I see it. I see it all over Twitter. People back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And what generally happens is someone puts out a comment and then they get ganged up on by a group of friends because the person who originally saw the comment replies, all the friends see the reply. They're all of the same mindset. They all gang up on the person who made the comment they didn't like. And it's never very nice. It's never very thoughtful, and it's never very productive. I heard Gerard, got to get this guy's name right. I heard Gerard Carmichael, comedian, got a special on HBO. I heard him say in an interview, social media is anger without action. And I thought that was perfect. I like that. Social media is anger without action. So yeah, we can all tone down the rhetoric on social media. That might help. But finally, I refuse to become cynical. I refuse to become miserable. That's what miserable people want, more misery. I'm going to keep my head up, and I'm going to stay hopeful. I'll let this guy explain it, because he can do a better job than I can. Thanks for listening. Visit the website, www.thecomparisongroup.com. Follow me on Twitter, @comparison_show. I'll see you next time.
There is discrimination in this world, and slavery and slaughter and starvation. Governments repress their people. Millions are trapped in poverty while the nation grows rich and wealth is lavished on armaments everywhere. These are differing evils, but they are the common works of man. They reflect the imperfection of human justice, the inadequacy of human compassion, our lack of sensibility towards the suffering of our fellows. But we can perhaps remember, even if only for a time, that those who live with us are our brothers, that they share with us the same short moment of life, that they seek, as we do, nothing but the chance to live out their lives in purpose and happiness, winning what satisfaction and fulfillment they can. Surely this bond of common faith, this bond of common goal, can begin to teach us something. Surely we can learn, at least to look at those around us as fellow men. And surely we can begin to work a little harder to bind up the wounds among us and to become in our own hearts brothers and countrymen once again. The answer is to rely on you. Not a time of life, but a state of mind, a temper of the will, a quality of imagination, a predominance of courage over timidity, of the appetite for adventure over the love of ease. The cruelties and obstacles of this swiftly changing planet will not yield to the obsolete dogmas and outworn slogans. They cannot be moved by those who cling to a present that is already dying, prefer the illusion of security to the excitement and danger that come with even the most peaceful progress. It is a revolutionary world we live in, and this generation at home and around the world has had thrust upon it a greater burden of responsibility than any generation that has ever lived. Some believe there is nothing one man or one woman can do against the enormous array of the world's ills. Yet many of the world's great movements of thought and action have flowed from the work of a single man. A young monk began the Protestant Reformation. A young general extended an empire from Macedonia to the borders of the earth. A young woman reclaimed the territory of France. It was a young Italian explorer who discovered the New World, and the 32-year-old Thomas Jefferson who reclaimed that all men are created equal. These men move the world, and so can we all. Few will have the greatness to bend history itself, but each of us can work to change a small portion of events. And in the total of all those acts will be written the history of this generation. Each time a man stands up for an ideal, or acts to improve the lot of others, or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope. And crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance. Few are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censure of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage is a rarer commodity than bravery in battle or great intelligence. Yet it is the one essential, vital quality for those who seek to change a world that yields most painfully to change. And I believe that in this generation, those with the courage to enter the moral conflict every corner of the globe. For the fortunate among us, there is the temptation to follow the easy and familiar paths of personal ambition and financial success, so grandly spread before those who enjoy the privilege of education. But that is not the road history has marked out for us. Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty. But they are also more open to the creative energy of men than any other time in history. All of us will ultimately be judged. And as the years pass, we will surely judge ourselves on the effort we have contributed to building a new world society and the extent to which our ideals and goals have shaped that event. Our future may lie beyond our vision, but it is not completely beyond our control. It is the shaping impulse of America that neither fate nor nature, nor the irresistible tides of history, but the work of our own hands, matched to reason and principle, that will determine our destiny. There is pride in that, even arrogance, but there is also experience and truth. In any event, it is the only way we can live. That is the way he lived. That is what he leaves us. My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. To be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it. Those of us who loved him and who take him to his rest today pray that what he was to us, what he wished for others, will someday come to pass for all the world. As he said many times in many parts of this nation, to those he touched and who sought to touch him, some men see things as they are and say, why? I dream things that never were and say, why not?